It's your girl, Queen Sunny Honey, and welcome to another edition of Freedom Friday. That's right. Welcome to the Caribbean Radio Show. We are the Knowledge Station. Coming up this week, you guys, if you tuned into last week's episode, you already know that we are on a fast track record with none other than our sister on the other side of the planet, giving us 20 years of expertise in living abroad. So for today's topic, let's talk about Black immigrants. Yes, yes. So if you have a friend, let them know it's time to tune in to Queen Sunny Honey and Dr. Champagne Odin. Dr. Champagne, are you on the line?
Yes, I am. Thank you for that.
Thank you for coming always. Everyone has been talking about your Instagram this week. It has been so major. I enjoy your lives. Actually, the topic is really hot because about a month ago, you prepared us through escapism. You've given us tips on what it's like to leave a home country and not be prepared. And lo and behold, we wake up and we're watching history repeating itself. And I just want to thank you for being the type of sister who can speak on it, not coming from someone who's never left the U.S., someone who's never immigrated herself into another society, but you have given a lot of valid points and perspectives coming from people all over the world. So thank you, thank you, thank you. For those of people out here who are new to your show, can you please tell them who you are and how they can also tune in to your Instagram?
Sure, I'll just give a really quick, very quick version of myself. So thank you everyone for joining us. My name is Dr. Champagne Odin. I'm from Akron, Ohio. So shout out to LeBron James, shout out to the best track coach ever, Olin Clay. We call him Coach Clay. So like I said, I'm from Akron. I've been abroad 20 years now. I left when I was about 21, 23. When I was a teenager, I was track star. I ended up getting a scholarship, athletic and academic scholarship, to go to school in West Virginia. Then while I was there, I studied abroad 3 times. So 1 time in China, 2 times in London. And then I finally did my master's degree in London as well. Then I came over to Japan 13 years and 9 months ago, soon to be 10 months ago. And I've been here as an English teacher. You know, I started off English teaching, and obviously I've, you know, upgraded. Now I'm a university professor, but I'm still, you know, self-employed as a private English teacher as well. Shout out to Robert Kiyosaki. It's even if you are employed by someone, you still need to have the mindset that you are a business, and either you are self-employed part-time on the side or full-time, or you have your own business on the side as well. So here I am.
Yes. And where can they find you on Instagram?
Oh, thank you. So you can find me at Private Lessons with an S, Japan. Private Lessons, Japan. Instagram is actually the fastest way to find me, but I'm also on YouTube as well. But Instagram is faster, way faster.
All right. Now let's jump into the topic. Can you tell the people about your lives this week so we can jump right into it? Let them know what they've been missing so that as soon as the show is over, I want everyone to go to the lives and watch these powerful videos.
Well, thank you so much for saying they're powerful. You know, it's funny. I actually did not do a live today because I felt like I had said everything I needed to in those 2 lives, and they were both like 45 minutes. So now that I have to talk about them again, it's like, oh, I did do those lives. So so the first one was called Black Migrants Get Wake Up Call, Texas, USA. And I was just speaking on how, you know, the Haitian migrants, how they're being deported, and, you know, also how, you know, the Haitian immigrants. So a migrant means somebody who goes and will go back. An immigrant is more like somebody who goes and stays put. So the Haitian immigrants in the U.S. in Miami, Little Havana, and sorry, I got to look at my notes. Little Havana is about 3.5 square miles, and it's about 33,000 Haitians that live there. But when I found out, like, I was like, okay, now they're being gentrified out of their own community. I'm like, how is this possible? Like, you've been in the States, what, since the 60s, so surely you have been building something, right? And I guess the answer is no, because when I tried to research, like, Haitian wealth, USA, the thing that I came up with is, like, a lot of articles talked about spending habits, decreasing your debt, increasing income, and investing in small businesses, which that's great, but that's not necessarily wealth creation. Wealth creation is like, okay, I'm going to buy these stocks, I'm going to buy these bonds, I'm going to buy this land so I can build something on it so that we can have it for future generations. But, you know, and another article said, like, oh, getting your education, having a home, having faith, that's not wealth. That's just like stuff that makes you feel good. That doesn't mean anything when you're getting kicked out of your neighborhood. So I just found that really, really, I don't know if it's surprising or just, wow, I can't believe this is happening to them. But as Jason Black says, shout out to Jason Black, if you're not building, then what are you doing? So that was my first video. And then my second video was actually called, I think, FBAs versus Black Immigrants. And immigrants are the ones who are in the U.S. And the reason why I had the second show, because I wasn't going to have the second show on that topic, I was going to speak about something else, is that an African woman, and I think, I'm not sure, if I had to guess, I'm going to guess she's West Coast African, Nigerian. Yeah, I'm sorry?
I was saying she sounded West African.
Yeah, I mean, even though I didn't hear her voice, but, you know, I'm looking at the way she's writing, mannerism, tone, aggression. I mean, you know, we're teachers, so we can read under, you know, what somebody has written, you know. So I'm just going to guess she's probably Nigerian. She did say first generation, and I'm just assuming she's West Coast. But she had said something like, to make a long story short, oh, Black Americans are divisive. And I was saying, like, how are we divisive? And this was in my first show. I said, you know, we don't have tribes. We're not tribalistic people. That's you. Stop projecting onto us. And I was just like, how are we divisive? And she's like, oh, your language. I said, what language? So it made me think, like, okay, like, I know we're not divisive because, like I said, we're not tribalistic. I've been overseas 20 years, and anytime I interact with other Blacks, like, they don't really know where I'm at until I start speaking, because I can, I don't know, the way I look, I can kind of just match with other people. I found, you know, especially Blacks in the UK to be very divisive. I find Africans to be the most divisive, Caribbeans as well. And you know what? Ain't nothing wrong with that. I don't care, but don't project onto us. That's all I'm saying. So that was my second video. That was the topic.
Hey, there was something so interesting that hit me about the perception that foundational Black Americans are lazy. Tell the people, honey, what's the response that we have to this?
Okay, well, Dr. Professor Black Truth, he said, and I'm just paraphrasing, that if we're lazy and we don't follow the law, then why is it that Haitians are in Latin America getting kicked out since they're so not lazy and they're so law-abiding? So if you're saying that about us, and why is it not working for you in other countries? Surely, if you tell them you're hardworking and you're law-abiding, they'll let you stay, right? Wrong. And in my own words, how can we be lazy if we built the country? You do realize, if there were no Black Americans, you know, we were the original people there anyways, but if we did not build America, you would be standing on grass. Like, do people not understand that, or are you trying to fool yourself? And another thing, like, for me personally, like, when I went to Africa to do business three or four times, I think it was four times, Rwanda and Ghana, I mean, I kept getting people who were lazy, who wanted me to come there to, you know, to their institutions and teach, not get paid, not talk to the chancellor, wanting me to give people money, wanting me to go to Uganda and not even tell me how to get there. So in terms of lazy, if we're lazy and we build America and we look at Black countries, then what do you describe that at? Which adjective would you use to describe yourself? That's what I would say to that.
One thing I really appreciated about just listening to your live was the fact that if we're lazy, then what are you done for yourselves and your country? If we're lazy, then why are you here? Because inevitably, the work of the Foundational Black America gave you the passport to come in. If it wasn't for us, you would not be welcome on American soil. So if we're so lazy, what are you doing with your resources that's going to build your economy to actually show proof of anything? Why would you leave your country if it was so great to come to America and talk down on other Americans? I'm not saying this about the Haitian population. I'm saying this about anyone who has the audacity to call my ancestors from America the lazy ones. Honey, you got me to thinking that there is a reason why we're struggling right now with the notion of seeing people come from Haiti, coming from the South Americas. See, I needed things to make it make sense. Who was a photographer for all of these images? A good photographer, a good journalist is going to say, hey, let me give you pictures of children, because that will really get whoever it is. It's really going to touch them. Are people crying for your issues in Black America when Sandra Bland and countless other Black females that never get reporting on? Is there a unity for us? And then when you have your issues, aren't you supposed to like band together? If you have trouble in troubled waters, times like this, you would have the advocacy. I also took to social media to research and say, who are my Haitian celebrities? You know, to kind of connect with people, whether it was Pastor Choi, there's a Wyclef Jean, there's so many people that Mona Scott, when I look to their social media pages, this past week, I didn't see anything. So I started to question and say, hey, is it like the NBA who's not going to give up sponsorship and speak on certain sensitive topics at the end of the day? Or, you know, is it so, why won't you speak for your country and for your people? Are we at a point where we can just come together and say, hey, every Black family, you got refugee camps everywhere? Okay, Lauryn Hill and the original refugee camp. All the Black Christian churches are band together and say, how many thousands of people out there? We're going to have our own people. This is the will of God, the will of Allah, whether you're Muslim, whatever it is. We're going to be opening our doors. We're going to have a place for you to come to just know that these people have left. Make this make sense, Dr. Champagne. If you look at a map geographically, how did the Haitians bypass Florida, Little Haiti, Louisiana, to use the port of Texas as an entryway? Or are they coming from South America? Can you make that make sense to me?
Yes. Like I mentioned before, when I listened to Professor Black Truth earlier, he was saying that they were in Latin America. Am I saying that right? Latin America. So Belize, Panama, Guatemala, and Mexico. But the Mexicans like, y'all gotta go. Like, you know, you're not welcome here. So I don't know how they got from Haiti to the Central America to the North America. I don't know about that, but I do know to get to the States, they had to come through Mexico on foot with no visas and no money and with children.
There have been certain people that have been talking about those who did well in South America, and when the president, current president, said, hey, we're opening up the borders, that this enticed them to take the leap. So when we look at social responsibility, is it okay for us to think that the same government that we turn to for government assistance that has done whatever for the Afghan population, is that also something that our expectations should be for Haiti, for our government to come in? What do you think?
I'm so glad you said that. I just listened to Dr. Claude Anderson. I'm getting out my other notebook. Okay, now let me just find it. Just a moment. Hold on. And Dr. Anderson is the truth. Okay, I believe 1791, affirmative actions for whites. This is a white nation, yes. Okay, 1791, the U.S. declared the U.S. as a white nation. And also, if we fast forward to, just a moment, 1924, the one drop rule, that means if you're black, if you have one drop of blackness, you're black. So that was put in place so that we can uphold that this is a white country, white people, or so white people would be, you know, Hispanics, Asians are honorary rights, the Taliban, they're Arabs, they're whites. They can come in, but anyone else with the one drop of black blood, you're black, you're not welcome. And even Dr. Claude Anderson stated how there's like a 0.5% quota of black immigrants that can come into the States every year. So yeah, I mean, you cannot expect a government who has set up the two things and many other things, but those two things specifically I just mentioned, to also welcome people who has the one drop of black blood. So yeah, I hope that answers your question.
Absolutely, because with that 0.5%, for everyone that's listening, it means that they're only going to pick the richest of the people of color to allow into the country. It won't be for the story. Now I want you to share a story that I heard in a live. It tickled me about the truck driver. Can you please tell the people this story time?
Yes, okay guys, story time. Actually, I have two stories within this. Now y'all know I love me some Tariq Nasheed. I love Jason Black. Now Jason Black is always helping young black men get their weight up. I do the same, but he's way better than me. But so he was saying how you need to get your CLC, your truck driver's license, you need to get a fleet, you need to be self-independent, you know, which is great. I'm so for that. And I remember me and boyfriend, he was saying how, like, you know, some of his friends were saying some not so nice things like, oh, you know, they're always fighting, they're lazy. But his friend married an FBA woman. So I was like, well, if we're so lazy, why are you marrying our women? Well, first, why are you coming to the country? Second, why are you marrying our women? And number three, why are you being a truck driver? And there's nothing wrong with being a truck driver, but if you are so not lazy and law-abiding and you're not an Akada, surely you can do more than being a truck driver, right? So that is my story.
Mm-mm. Not a surgeon, not a lawyer, but to come right over and, you know, if for you to leave your country just to be the truck driver.
Yeah.
That's the pinnacle.
Exactly.
You know, topics like this remind me of the great debate that happened before we were ever born. Shout outs to the ancestors like the talented 10th, Carter G. Woodson, with the miseducation of the Negro. Because history is truly repeating itself when the notion of, hey, we're codependent, we're looking to the government to help us get a leg up, versus self-sustainability, and others in the history that debated and say, hey, no, we gotta tighten up the bootstraps and actually have it going on for ourselves and self-sustainability. No one's coming to save us. Now I'm looking at this cycle of people this week, whether or not they're people all over America, with the outcry. But the wondering of, is this just gonna be swept under the rug because there's gonna be something else that'll pop up in 7 days? Will you have the same fire for your own issues? Can you actually help others if you're not in a state of helping yourself? If you haven't elected enough and built your own communities right within the foundational black community, how can you ask for an invitation to the White House when the script will be, hey, at least we gave you an invite, but no, we're not going to do anything? It seems like a touchy subject, but one thing I appreciate about you, Dr. Oden, is you're willing to talk from experience and bring up the conversations that no one else wants to talk about. Everyone else wants to skirt around the issue. If you know anything about Wyclef Jean, this guy from the Fugees with Lauryn Hill, him and the other guy, Prez, they're both from Haiti. I will never forget, when I was a kid, there was a song, Diablo, about a Haitian immigrant in the city that had been gunned down. And, you know, a lot of times people are saying, I'm not black. I am everything else but the black association. However, the cops in America are not looking at your accent. Mm-hmm. They're seeing
they probably can't even hear it, to be honest.
Thank you. Trick Daddy from Miami. He had a song when I was a kid, you know, "You Still a Nigger." You know, all these things that irregardless of you saying that I'm not one of those foundational Black Americans, in the moment that you're saying it, you're looking down. I'm superior to that. There's a bit of xenophobia that comes with this. And then I recall in Wyclef Jean's journey of him going back to the country of Haiti and attempting, this is in a documentary that I watched, he wanted to hold a political seat. And I was thinking like, wow, you know, you're really trying to take your resources back to your country to make it better. This is empowerment. You know, even in that section of time, I was like, wow, if your country accepts you, perhaps all Blacks around the world could go to a non-colonized place and say, I'm setting up my businesses in Haiti. I'm setting up buying homes in Haiti the same way we look to go running to Africa that's still colonized to this day. However, that documentary taught me that they attempted to assassinate Wyclef. And he even wrote a song way before he tried to get into politics with Haiti and said, the lyrics were, if I were president, I get elected on this day, and by the end of the week, he would be assassinated. I never forgot that song.
I like that song. That's deep.
And now we've actually lived long enough to see the assassination of the current president, to also understand that nobody could have gotten to the Haitian president without getting paid off because your Secret Service should have been on their job. It'd be your own people.
And those were like people from South America, right? The assassins?
Yes.
Also, guys, Foundation Black Americans, that's your Black and Brown coalition. Do you get what I'm saying?
That's right. Team up on a good day, so when you have a rainy day, we will have the power. You can pick up the phone. You can know, hey, we're insured. We have come into these communities and built a bond. We got political leaders we put in. You got so many Puerto Ricans in office. You got so many people that represent, and that's the reason why their demographic is taken care of in those places throughout America. But when you come over, something else you said in the live, if you're so oblivious, if racism does not exist and you are so much better than the foundational Black American, take your hind parts and set your business up in that white neighborhood.
Right. Or set it up in a Black neighborhood. Because like I said, now if I'm wrong, please tell me. But when I look to try to find wealth in the neighborhood of, in Little Haiti, I couldn't find it. I mean, and like I said, unless I'm just not looking well, it's either it's not there or I'm not looking well. It's either or. So, yeah, I mean, if you don't want to build with us, you don't want to build in a white neighborhood, then build in your own neighborhood. But where is that? Honestly, all Black immigrants, what have you built in your own communities that is so fly? Like, please let me know.
Compare Little Haiti to Chinatown. Can you do that?
Girl, there is no comparison. That's like, I'm trying to think of a game. I can't think of a game right now. But, okay, with Chinatown, first of all, it's a town. Okay, let's start there. There's buildings, and I'm going to talk about Chinatown in Japan and Yokohama. The whole area is like sectioned off. You know this is Chinatown. Shout out to Dr. Claude Anderson. They got the Chinese music up. They have the Chinese restaurants. They have the Chinese festival. They have a bank. They have homes. They have everything they would need in a very small community. Everything they need is there, and it's Chinese owned. That is a Chinatown. What does Little Haiti have? I mean, honestly, do you have a bank? Do you have a grocery store? Do you have a school? Do you have a church? Do you have homes that are increasing in value? Like, what do you own? And I think that's a legitimate question.
And this goes out not just for Little Haiti, but any demographic of melanated people who've moved over to America. While we do know you are welcome, a matter of fact, this show is all about solutions here, the Caribbean Radio Show. We're getting at the thing that's missing. When you taste the pot of food, it's a seasoning missing. And that's the unity that you must have. That's getting your power economics. Shout out to Dr. Anderson of saying power economics. Black foundational Americans, you too have to have a bank. You have to have your own neighborhoods because you know gentrification. You know it all too well. So when every community, whether or not you are a refugee that came from another country, you're from Uganda, you're from Liberia, all these communities that are set up, don't you ever get so comfortable in separating yourself and being just within your own little family ties, a couple people in a neighborhood, because what you're seeing with Haiti can very well happen to you, because what was written in the law books is always applies to all of us.
Yes. One drop blood rule? Yeah, one drop rule.
That's all right. Of us. So, you know, we got
the only
people.
The difference between us and non-FBA blacks is that we can't be sent anywhere. You guys can be sent home at any time. Like, what is to stop them, honestly? They're already kicking the Haitians out, putting them on the jets, not the jets, those big, you know,
cargo planes.
Oh, that's a cargo? Okay. I didn't know what that was. I was like, why it look like that? Okay, cargo planes 8 times a day. What's something to stop there? What's something to not stop from coming to Little Miami and getting you? What's to stop them? You're in their system.
You know, I'm going to bring up my favorite quote from Harriet Tubman. I saved hundreds. I could have saved thousands if only they knew they were slaves. That's the awareness that people were living in a situation and didn't know that they were slaves. So when you come over to America and you're like, I have my house, I have my job, and now I don't want to speak about my home country, that's a detriment to your people, unlike any other classification of people all around. Jamaicans are sending their money back home. Africans are sending their money back home. What are you doing to make sure that you have a way that is bringing over other people who are enslaved in their situation? If only they knew they were slaves. Well, you might have moved up the road to a whole new plantation called America, baby. That's all it is.
It is a plantation. Thank you for saying that.
Here's story time for me. I stopped working in a career. There's a difference between a job and career. My ex used to say, oh, my girl doesn't have a job. She has a career just to let the street folks actually know the caliber of woman. But I recall giving up my career to take care of my mother. And then when my mother passed away, I went to my father in tears, and we speak in parables in my family. I said, Daddy, I've been off the plantation so long. You know, I've been working as a field hand. And now I don't know if Massa gonna let me back in the White House. Now, for those of you who don't understand, I was saying I've been unemployed. Therefore, my resume will reflect a gap. The field hand work are white collar, you know, just the everyday life jobs. Not a career, but a job. And I was wondering if I could beg my way back in to corporate America.
Because
the essence of not working for yourself is inevitably joining someone's the interview is begging to be on the plantation. I don't care what it is. If it's a job, it's a job. A career, a career. So looking at people who are foundational Black Americans and this albatross around our neck to break through glass ceilings, how much more powerful could things be when every demographic of melanin is invested within ourselves? The African, the Nigerian who comes over, who gets the degree, and he's like, yeah, I band together with this group of Black people and people from other parts of the world, and I go around making these banks for every state that has a certain percentage of Black folks. We got our own bank there, and I have the same bank in Nigeria for diasporans who come over here. Now that's power economics. Talk to the people about the redlining, because we need to understand the issue that's really going on with Haiti. Can you break that down for us?
Yeah, and like just going back to what Jason Black was saying, he was saying like redlining, and I had to look it up because I was like, what is that? It's when like the, you know, you have the beach, but it's being corroded. So that means the beach and the shoreline is actually disappearing. So that means anybody who got a house on a beach, you gonna have a house under the beach. So people obviously, and it's like reverse gentrification. I know I had a problem with that on my live. So it's kind of like, I feel like whites wanted to get away from blacks, so they left the cities. And now, and this is even happening in Akron, where I'm from, Akron, Ohio. Now they're coming back to the cities. You see me? So it's like this redlining is like, it's the same thing, but it's more environmentally caused. Like it's Mother Earth who's doing it.
So, what does this mean for Haitians?
Oh, it means y'all about to be gentrified because, and hold on, let me go back to my notes 1 second. I was looking, and I saw something called, this guy name is Serge Rodriguez, and he is a lead stakeholder in development planning. And when I heard Rodriguez, I was like, okay, Hispanic. But when I saw this picture, black guy, but I was like, they could be doing, you know, it could be the same thing with Obama, you know, put a black face in office and then do our bidding. Could be something like that. But he's
Message.
supposed to be, I'm sorry?
Oh, I was pulling. I said message.
Yeah, like he's supposed to be development planning, and like I guess his company has like lots of millions and stuff. But if yours, and I don't think he's Haitian because his last name is Rodriguez, but if that's supposed to be your people, then why are they getting kicked out of their neighborhoods? Like, who are you developing for, is my question. So I just found that to be really interesting, really, really interesting with this guy. So,
I'm not, are you familiar with Gullah culture?
gullah culture,
Yes.
like gully, like you getting gully, you getting buck on somebody like that?
No. In South
No.
Carolina, I am our people are Gullah Geechee.
Oh, yes. Okay, I'm sorry. Gullah Geechee, I got you. Yes.
Well, this redlining actually ties into our history of South Carolina when historically during slavery, a lot of the Gullah Geechee people were able to stay away from colonialism. And then once slavery was over, I recall growing up, when you go to college with people from Charleston, the Gullah Geechee people, you would think they're from the Caribbean islands, a strong accent. And what happened in the early days, if you ever want to watch a good movie about it, Daughters of the Dust, jot that down, everybody, watch it. And it shows the gentrification of the Gullah Geechee culture in South Carolina, whereas one part of history, you just stayed away from country folk, looked down on us, didn't want to hire us if we didn't speak proper King's English with the vernacular that came. But then they looked at the land and began to say, hey, as people migrated up north, sell away, sell away. And if you are a black person, travel down to the most beautiful parts of Charleston in this lifetime. If you're going to go to Italy, London, all these other places, come and see your American beauty to understand the land of the people that the ports came in, that now you can't even afford to be there because it's already been gentrified. When you brought up reverse gentrification, we look at the billion-dollar homes, and I mean just neighborhoods full of billion-dollar real estate that was 100% owned by us, that not even
Wow.
0.5% of us live there anymore. And all of this is something that, you know, we got Gullah Gullah Island. I don't know if anybody grew up watching that, but for non-foundational Black Americans as well, tune into this history that keeps repeating itself so that you can get a greater understanding. Redlining, whether it's on the shores of Haiti, is letting you know they're pushing you out of your country by way of real estate. And yes, Hillary Clinton and all her homies have set up foundation. When they were in office, they saw the value of your land then. When there was all these accusations of WikiLeaks, that was tied around the country of Haiti and human trafficking children. And knowing that no one was actually going to say anything at all. So please, before you leave home to something that's greater and say, I'm gonna leave this just to be a truck driver, I'm renouncing this, I'm turning away from this for the rest of my life. If you're turning away from your country and your people, is that what we're living in right now?
And that, just turning away, that sounds like fleeing. Like you're just fleeing, you're giving up. That's not honorable to do either.
So you're going to move to another country and raise your flag up proudly, but then ignore all the situations that you just fleed from. Make this make sense right to me.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense. And also, can I interject? What you just said about, you said billion-dollar homes and real estate. Did you guys know, shout out to Dr. Claude Anderson, that, and shout out to the Haitians, Toussaint Louverture, you know, he got at those white folks so badly, Napoleon and them, that Napoleon had to sell land in the States from the Mississippi to the Atlantic Ocean. Most of that was owned by France, and he sold it for 5 cents an acre. Now, I don't know what 5 cents was in, I think, 1795, but 5 cents is still 5 cents. And you just said now it's worth billions. So that's just, wow.
Thank you for bringing up Toussaint Louverture. I will never forget meeting a brother overseas, Haitian background. He had no idea who Toussaint Louverture, and I went off.
Shout out to Tariq Nasheed. It's like we love Haitian history more than some of the people from that country.
Yes. You know, I'm glad you're saying these things, because I spent a whole week of tears, emotions, and then after all the tears, I'm like, are you crying for somebody that's not crying for you, that's not crying for their issue? It was just a battle, because as a foundational Black American who left America in pursuit of just all things Black, walking into a room and just loving the history behind our people, to now living in the reality, now that I'm over 40, I understand a lot of these countries aren't, it's, the feeling's not mutual. There is no reciprocity. They're not looking at me like I'm their sister, like you mentioned earlier. Right. You get to Africa, and it's like, are you really asking us foundational Black Americans to fix the problems and build
for up
for free 99? And that's the real thing. It's like, no, you're not welcome to sit with me as my sister, but if you want to donate, then I might as well sit my behind at home and donate and build up the communities that we are renting and not even owning.
Right. Exactly. And like I said, like I was talking to, I'm not going to say who the person was, but I was like, oh my God, I've been there 4 times. I showed them what I can do. I showed them how to get jobs in Japan. And also for one of the universities I went to in the east of Rwanda, they have a lot of natural like plants and stuff that they can export. I even told them, hey, listen, to export in Japan, very, very easy. To import, very easy. I went to Jetro. They showed me how to do it. All you got to do is send your stuff on the boat and collect it at the port. That's it. I said, I can be your point person. Just give me 30% of the contract, and I will do all the heavy work. I'll make sure that the moringa plant goes to where it needs to go to. That's easy. It's done. Do you think they wanted to do that? No. But they want me to come there and just teach and teach and teach and stay for 3 months like I have nothing better to do. As if, I get it. Like my boyfriend was trying to explain to me that they think that we're millionaires and we, you know, we're millionaires, so we can come there and do all this stuff. But it doesn't matter if I'm a millionaire or not. Like, do you think I just have time to take away from my job in Japan to come and be with you guys and not get anything out of it? It's really annoying.
Let you know, you're not welcome, but your money is. And you brought up
right.
a valid
your money
point.
And your free, yeah, your free services.
When you brought up a valid point about the import-exports, one of the complaints from foundational Black Americans is, oh, when they open a Black business, it's so much more expensive than the other side. It's just cheaper for me to go and buy my stuff from the Asians. If I'm going to buy hair care products, I'll buy it from them because the Black company is more expensive. And then I would tell people in our community, the reason why is brokers. We need people at the ports. A broker back in those days when I would share this information would be like $100 an hour. I was trying to tell people, hey, you don't need a college degree, but you doggone sure need good credit. And if you can catch one family, if every Black family, listen up, there are degrees that you are getting, biology degrees, and you working as a barista. How about stop going into the fields that don't count and tap in and Google and see what the lowest percentage of us in those in certain industries that you don't even know about. Those are the things that you should go and pursue certification, licensure, degrees in those elements, because that's what's paying, not the debt that you're jumping into just because 10,000 people in your state all got the biology degree and you're sitting here wondering why you work for Starbucks. If you can compel someone in your bloodline upon their 18th birthday to be financially on the financial mindset of saying, okay, I will, because I have good credit, I will take this broker's exam, then everybody in your state, in the tri-state area all around you, all of those businesses will say, we finally got a black broker. Less than 1% of the entire world is black brokers. And if you don't understand the importance of a broker, it means that when things are imported to your country, if you're a black-owned business, you're like, I want to sell things from Africa. None of your stuff can touch American soil until it can deliver it on the ship. The big thing on the back of the 18-wheeler is here, but it will go rotten waiting on that broker who makes $100 an hour back in the 90s to actually come down and sign off on it. The very thing Dr. Champagne was saying she was willing to do to connect one African country to all of the resources in Japan. So nothing, that's the reason why the prices are so much higher for black businesses, is because they're having to pay that tax and it falls onto the customer. Until we get more people looking like us, until we can get a good 1% of this world just to be a black broker, you're always going to have this complaint.
And that's true. Can I also interject? Now, you know, black women, we're the ones that started the black hair industry. And now the Koreans own it. Okay, just let me just say this. When I went to India like 10 years ago, right, I wanted to buy some hair so I could do my, like sometimes I wear micros, sometimes I wear cornrows. So I went to the hair store and I was like, I said, listen, I want to buy some human hair. So you got some? And she was like, what? I said, like human? I said, you know, like your hair? I said, you know that in India, where I was at, I said, you know, you guys have those temples and people go and they shave their heads and then the hair gets sent to America. So that hair. And she was like she honestly was like, I have no idea what you're talking about. So I had to buy synthetic hair, which was fine, you know, whatever. But the point is, if black women, if we're the only ones that wear black hair and stuff, why do we not have a point person in India or Brazil or Malaysia or wherever we're getting the hair? We need to have somebody there who can either go and buy, just buy the stuff from the temples, de-lace it, de-bug it, you know, package it, and just send it off to America. Why don't we have that?
You know, with drop shipping, a lot of black people are into it, but they don't realize that you're paying the middleman instead of being the owner of everything, of being the only person between cut out the middleman, take a trip, write it off on your LLC, get it straight from the temple, and you don't have to pay someone else. You will be the distributor for everyone in your region. Now, story time for me.
Shout out to Frank Lucas. Isn't that what he did? Was that Frank Lucas with Denzel? He played Frank Lucas, right?
That's right.
Yeah, he was like, well, fine, I'm just going to go to Vietnam. That's what he did.
Now, here's my story time. Years ago, there was a woman in California. She was brought up on charges because the government found out, y'all doing natural hair and we're not getting a cut. So during this time, they arrested this woman, and her court case went all kinds of ways until the U.S. government discovered, hey, the Africans are coming and making their braid shops. We had people go to cosmetology school, but we got to find a way to tax this. So they had arrested her for practicing hair on natural hair for the braids. And you know, you go to Mexico, they do it on the beach, put your little beads on everything. And so out of this court case, was an agreement that, and I'm the person that while everybody else is on social media, I'm looking at the House and the Senate, everything that's on the agenda. I'm always into those files. So I discovered that by, you know, a year from now, back in the day, if you were to get your natural hair license, you would just take an exam and pay like, what, less than $20. So I started campaigning and telling all of Black America, hey, if you need help, if you don't even have $20, I'm willing to donate. Come on, guys, get this, take this test, because according to the federal government, after this particular date, you got to go to cosmetology school. You can go to jail for cornrowing anybody here that's not a family member. You know, because Black women always talk about edges. It's the secret joke behind edges. I lose my edges. Because when you have wigs and everything, you still have braiding. So now the government has found a way to make money. So I need you. You know, Foundational Black America ignored me, and it was a Latino woman. Only one person. It was a Latino woman who said, okay, I'm selling to the Afro-Latinas. They're buying from me because I could almost pass for a white woman. So I'm just super successful. And Black woman, Foundational Black Woman, Queen Sunny Honey, thank you for sharing this information, because I will be the one. She was the only one who went and got it.
Wow.
And now to this date, all these years later, I got my natural hair care license. And so I can, you know, I love that you're bringing up this. Guys, I've only wanted, and I keep pursuing, and I paid the annual license fee of like, what, it was less than $20 every single year. So that's my insurance. When I get back to America, I would have had 10 years of holding the license. I can enter any country with that and be able to go to the temples and do these things for our people. But we got to get out of the xenophobia of just, you know, thinking that you're better. I'm better because I'm this type of Black, and I don't say that I'm this. Come on, people, come together in unity, because at times like this, all of Haiti could not get import-export since Toussaint Louverture, and the ancestors have been waiting for all the rest of the Blacks on the planet to say, let's vacation there the way that we go to non-white communities, the way that we don't want to go to any Black communities. When we buy real estate, let's go buy real estate in Haiti. Let's stimulate the economy amongst Black people so that we can have that one place. Outside of Haiti, we got Ethiopia, the two places on earth that Black people ought to be proud. But if you are being refusing each other, if you think that praising another race just to beg them to be on their plantation, beg them to be having a seat at the table, honey, you are the craftsman of the table. We could have designed our very own, and it's never too late.
The table. You're the foundation. I act like it. Yeah. And also what you said was very, very moving. When you said Blacks, we need to go. Shout out to Dr. Claude Anderson. I'm going to make this a long story real short. The reason why Haiti, although has gold, sugar, gas, and leather, although that is a very rich country material-wise, the reason why it as a nation is like just, I don't want to say beaten down, but I'm going to say locked in, is because they beat, you know, the French, they beat the Americans or the British at the time, and they beat the Spanish. And you know, white people don't like that. So now the U.S. has something called the Monroe Doctrine. And it says, in quote, like I'm paraphrasing, that no new colonial or white nations can come to Haiti and do business there or set up any like colonies. And I think that's in like the Western Hemisphere. So they're not like, no white companies or white countries can come and do business in Haiti without the permission of the U.S. And Dr. Claude Anderson, his suggestion, his way to, you know, fix that, he said it's very simple. It says no white countries. He said, listen, Haiti is a gold field. He said, go to the Japanese, the Chinese, and the Koreans. Make a deal that you'll do a joint venture and you will produce your raw materials there and send it off. So the fact that you said black, I mean, what's stopping, you know, black countries from doing what you just said? Well, hey, what's stopping us? Because we're Americans. We're allowed to do business in Haiti, too. So I just wanted to put that out there.
Guys, here at the Caribbean Radio Show, we are all about solutions. That's right. We are the solution for Haiti. Not for you to get on social media and give your little 5-minute outcry. I cried, I felt, and then do nothing. See, don't be fooled as a consumer. You are the producer. You are capable of so much more. Kodak Black, rapper from there. If you don't see Mona Scott, Kodak Black, Pastor Choi, Google and find out who are the Haitian American celebrities, Haitian American rappers. And since you are the reason that they are on American soil, going around the world, you brought them to fame, you love them so much, you reach out and you actually stimulate, because they're just entertainers. They're just puppets. But guess what? You a lawyer that bumps that music. Go ahead and suggest, hey, I want to, let's do business. Okay, what part of Haiti are you from? Okay, how can I use my skill set to contribute? Because if you think a field trip to the White House where that man's going to read some script that's already saying we don't take care of black Americans, we done got the Afghan celebrities out, we got our 0.5%. What do you think you can beg? At the end of the day, you better have a solution that's for us. You just heard it. Get in with your people all over the world. If you're sitting there loving a celebrity who is not loving their country and not in support, there's a problem.
Yeah, that's right. And shout out to any Haitian leaders. If you need me to help you with a deal with Japan, I am there for you.
Shout out to anyone.
I can definitely help you out with that.
Middle East, if you're out there, you from Haiti, reach me, the Middle East, I got you. If it's something that I don't have, I live in the richest nation on the planet with the highest currency value. And these people have people that work for them. So, hey, ain't nothing but a thing. Like I said last week, I'm baffled sometimes to know it could be a house of just 4 people and they have 42 servants that work for them. So when you have that much access, I think that I'm in around this environment for access to information, access to wealth. And for that, anything that I can do, let's be about the solutions for our people, because these people are just Haitians coming in from South America. We still have a lot of issues that we are our only solution for. If you think that going to someone else and begging them to be, man, I can imagine the top 1% of the world laughing at how we sweep things under the rug and then looking at a Netflix movie and seeing, you hurt my father. I'm Scottish, and when I was born, you murdered my father, and now I'm 21 and I've come to avenge. There has to be something in the genetic code of us as a people on this planet that you feel worthy that someone can band together and avenge all the shit that we have already gone through. Not foreseeing whatever is in the future, but we must band together for each other. I'll never forget being watching Hotel Rwanda, and I like to have a panic attack as a child because I said, Mommy, Mom, this happened while I'm breathing? I'm watching MTV. What in the world? No. The issue of one of us is all of us. So if times like this, because of social media, you are so hype over it, let's get hype about a solution. When anytime they murdered someone that was foundational Black America, I saw the white community pull together with a GoFundMe for the cop in 24 hours. Come on, Black people all over the world. I'm ready. It's been more than 24 hours. You have been blessed to be a celebrity. I want to see what you use with your celebrity status.
That's true. And also, like, you know, I think as Blacks, like, we need to stop looking for a leader. The code is the leader. You know what I'm saying? We have to be grassroots with it. You cannot, like, I'm tired of Blacks in general always waiting for some leader to come down from heaven, and you're going to go up to heaven and drink some, milk and honey. Like, just stop.
You lactose intolerant anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And so am I. So it's like, just stop. Okay, we got to be grassroots with it. Like, all the information is in Dr. Claus Anderson's book, Poweronomics, and we have so many other black scholars. The information and the solutions are there. We just have to do them. That's it.
Thank you so much, Dr. Champagne. And everybody, remember, go and check her out on Instagram, because we are going to be here till the wheels fall off. We're not reinventing wheels. We will always come to you, giving you a harsh truth, giving you things to think about, because we're all in this together. Until next time, guys, do bye-bye, boo.